Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Faith in Each Other. We're so glad you're here with us. And today we're talking about January 6th insurrection versus 1860 succession of states. Now, the goal of the people who support democracy should be to try to keep those mainstreamers who are teetering on the edge from joining the hive mentality of the insurrection. And the historical connections between January 6, 2021 insurrection and 1860 that led to the succession of seven states are troubling. But what is more scary is the ideological connections. It's no coincidence that in history, the refusal of electoral outcomes led to an insurrection, and sedition is democracy's arch enemy. In any of these situations, it means the means were always justified with lies so corrupt that it could bring someone teetering on the edge to taking up arms and even taking lives in the process. Now let's dive in to how we handled the last insurrection. Malice towards none, charity for all. Why doesn't that apply now? How do you feel like we handled the situation? I'll start with you, Tom. How do you think we handled the situation?
I feel like the way we handled the situation is it just fell into the political divide that we had. And I feel like the Democrats used it as an opportunity to show that the Republicans can't be trusted. And I think it was a guilt by association type thing where they're kind of have some of the same views as you. So you must have the same views as them. But to me, accepting the outcome of elections we don't like is a very difficult task. It's one of the main asks in democracy. And it's a faith-based thing. We accept elections when we have faith in the other people that they won't use the election in a vindictive way. And the other thing I would really emphasize about the insurrection is I don't view it as an event, but as a trend. Right. Obama had his legitimacy questioned in a very fundamental way. Clinton did, too. So did Bush, you know, the second Bush president, that he cheated in Florida, his brother. So we've had a series of presidents that the public, the people who are on the other side view as illegitimate. And then now this insurrection is the last example of it, by far the worst. And to me, I think it should be seen as just a general weakness in the democracy itself. It's, in other words, you have a knockdown, drag out fight with your wife, and it's like, hey, something's wrong with the marriage. We need to step back and look at some more fundamental issues. That's the way I see it. But as far as what it was used for, how we reacted to it, it was just one side took one position, the other side took the other, and nobody reached out. There was no outreach, no nothing. And that's why I really believe that pardoning could be a real sign that, you know, we're not scared. We're okay with it. We want to reach out to your side. So that's why I would advocate for doing the same thing that Lincoln did, which is that, you know, now we have to work with these people to form a government. So outreach is instead of prosecution.
Yeah, you said pardoning. That's an interesting idea, pardoning those actions. Pastor David, did you have any thoughts on that statement, malice towards none, charity for all? How do you think we handled the insurrection?
Jordan, I think when the insurrection took place, I think America was in shock. I think we went to shock this period in history. We were not ready for this. Even with disagreement and division in a nation, I think we believe we had advanced further in diplomacy, in questions that challenge, you know, our stance on situations. We didn't believe we had gotten to that place where there was, you know, for lack of better expression, a mutiny on the bounty to take place. I don't think anybody was ready for that. And so with it being just a year and some months behind us, we're still coming to grips with how did we get there, but is that the way we respond to disagreement, you know? And if so, what does that say about us as a nation? You know, what does that, what it spoke volumes of, you know, people definitely had a disagreement. I don't think there was no problem with that. I think the problem rested in how people would go about grabbing the answer that they thought would best fit their needs without seeing its effect on the rest of the nation. So I think it was a shocking view for we were probably just blown away to believe that America, and I won't use the most advanced nation in the world, but we're up there. How an advanced, civilized, intellectual nation, world state could take up arms and says, we're going to grab a decision regardless of everybody that's included. So I really think that, it was a moment in time, and we still haven't come to grips with what was it.
Absolutely. You can't ignore the anger and the mindset of those who stormed the Capitol. And I definitely think we need to turn a lens on it. And I personally, it was kind of too shocking to even come to grips. I kind of heard it third party, and I was like, it just seems so surreal. And like, there's no way this could be happening. Like you said, a nation that we are, there's what's happening? What's going on? I was just in so much awe of the entire situation. So I need to, for me, I would like to understand that mentality and that so much anger that led our people that, you know, into those actions, and even the people that weren't necessarily, you know, on that side of anger, but necessarily it was just, you know, caught up in the mob mentality of it, and, you know, just went along with it. You know, it's kind of shocking that happened. It's so shocking that I couldn't even comprehend it until, you know, it was a couple days removed. Do you think a pardon for all who have participated in the insurrection will show any kind of weakness or any kind of flaw in our democracy? And why would you pardon them? Like, Tom, why would you pardon those who stormed the Capitol? You mentioned pardoning.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we can start out by saying that, you know, the response to the end of the Civil War wasn't malice toward none. Right. Lincoln got assassinated, and then it became a much more contentious issue. And that's how we got the 13th, 14th and 15th Amendments. So, you know, even the story at the end of the Civil War is very complicated. But Lincoln did want to try to do malice toward none. But to me, no, the pardoning would be outreach to the people who don't support the insurrection, Republicans that don't support the insurrection. To me, that's what the pardoning would be. And it would be a show of strength. It wouldn't be a show of weakness, because we don't need to punish these people. And I think that we view the, there's always going to be people in democracy that don't trust their fellow citizens, don't have faith in their fellow citizens enough to support the democracy itself. And I think it's important to view that position is legitimate. If you don't think democracy is a good system, that's a legitimate position, but it eliminates you from being part of the conversation. If you want to be part of the conversation, then you have to be supportive of democracy. You have to hope that it wins in the end. But to me, the people that were involved in that insurrection are very troubled people that are unable to handle all the political talk that they hear and overreacted, and they're really not part of the conversation. They're not important. What they think doesn't matter. What matters is what the people who kind of think a little bit like them but don't support the insurrection are still with the democracy thing, what matters is what they think. And the reason I would support pardoning the people who participated in the insurrection is it would be outreach to the more moderate people that, you know, we're not coming after. So it's a message to them that we don't seek vindictiveness, that we're not going to use the power of government to hurt your people. We're still with you. We're still together in the overall goal of making a great country. So that's why I would say that the pardoning thing would be the best way to try to unify the country.
Now, pardoning, most of the people that would be pardoned would be white. Now, do you think that would further...
They're pretty much all white, right?
Got a break.
They're all white, right? I mean, it's not.
Yeah. Right. So, don't you think that would actually further the racial divide if they were, you know, given this break that we're talking about? You know,
I think we should let Dave jump in here, and then I'll respond to what he says. But don't forget that sentence, that question though, because it's a tough one, and I will answer it. Okay.
All right, Pastor Dave, he's passing it on to you. Do you think that it would actually create a bigger problem?
Yeah, I'm really interested in this.
If we were to give them a pardon, yeah.
I believe before pardon can take place, there must be an acknowledgement that something was done wrong. You know, that something outside of the honoring of a nation, the honoring of a people, the honoring of a government, from those who did what they did. Before we can say we can move to pardon, I think there's got to be an acknowledgement of we might have done the approach wrong, but we had something to say. We want the best for this nation, or somehow an admittance of there must be a conversation that shows that the people to be pardoned in this incident, the way they took to bring it about, it demanded that there be a legal repercussion. You know, if not, all of the nation could just go wild and say, you know, I got a beef with the power and light company. You know, I'm not going to pay for my electric anymore. Y'all going up too high. And I'm going to throw bricks through the window because I ain't paying for no more electricity. You know, they're going to haul me off to jail. They're not going to say Dave has a legitimate problem that his Social Security ain't paying and we need to just let. No, they're going to take me away because I have gone beyond what we have instituted as there's a process for disagreement. We have a process in this country for disagreement. When you don't adhere to that process and you go beyond what has been established as right and just and legal, then you set yourself up for the outcomes of that. And I think we could come to a place of can we pardon? But I think even right now, what is this, 18 months or 16 months since the insurrection took place on January the 6th, we're still at that. We don't have both sides. Well, the investigation, we're still up against. I'm not telling you. I'm destroying evidence. I'm not going to tell you what we did. We don't feel a sense of we owe you anything. We were taking our government, our country. We did what was right. An administration who signaled, let's go do whatever. I'm going, it's okay to want to air grievances. But if you just walk and say to these people, your actions, so we can move on, we will pardon you. Well, we're going to have to pull that out for a whole lot more incidences that then say, for the better sake of our nation, we're going to pardon each other. So I'm going, pardon is not off the table, but I don't think it's the first. I don't think it's the first step to uniting a nation. I just don't. I think if the first step is I acknowledge what I did. I take ownership of what I did. And there must be a, I want the best for my nation, not I want the best for my group. It is, I want the best for my nation. And then we began to say, then how do we make a better nation? And when we have agreed that we both want, or the we both want the same thing for our country, I have no problem with people saying, let's extend. I understand you. You understand me. This is what it's going to take for us to continue or to push forward to a better nation. And excuse me, and because of that, maybe it's best that we pardon this so we can move on. But if there is no moving on, I can't go with it, just a blanket pardon.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. As a man of faith, you would say pardon and lead with love, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? In a sense. All right, Tom. Tom, I'm very interested to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, I'd say that asking an African American person to support pardoning all those people, white people who were involved in the insurrection, is a huge ask. It is a huge ask. I also believe it is an ask that democracy will demand from you in the end. I think that, and not from you, I mean, from me too, from all of us. Yeah, I mean, it's like in the end of the day, for democracy to work, we're going to have to be able to do stuff like that. I would point out that there was very few prosecutions from the Floyd riots, where all kinds of property damage was done, very similar to the, a lot of people would really equate those. So there's a certain symmetry there. Now, do I support prosecuting the people who were involved in the, I don't know what the worst part of the Floyd riots was. I didn't really follow them, but whatever the worst thing was, I would not support prosecuting those people. I wouldn't. And I think the argument that, yeah, they're going to go down and riot again, maybe. I mean, but I don't think they'll do it unless they're angry about something that happened. I don't think they're just going to run out there and riot. If some other incident happens like that, where somebody's brutally murdered on the streets of Minneapolis, then yeah, they're probably going to riot again. But they're not going to riot just because it's not illegal. But the most important thing is that 200 people showed up in Charlottesville. Now, these guys were white supremacists. These guys were the real deal, right? And then they brought the whole country into this horrible event. Whereas, in my opinion, what it should have been is, you guys are racist, so you're not part of the conversation. And don't tell me you're not a racist, because you're carrying a Nazi flag. All right? You got Ku Klux Klan outfits on. So me calling you a racist, that's not outrageous, okay? You guys are picking the racist symbols for yourself. You want to be called a racist. So I'm just telling you the way it is. But those guys are not mainstream white America. I don't believe that. I don't believe that for a minute. And I believe that there's people on the other side that want to divide us too, and they have to be ignored as well. You know, whatever the most outrageous statement would be on the left side. But the point of the matter is that there's 90% of us who are involved in trying to make democracy work. And you got 5% on the right, 5% on the left, that are trying to wreck the whole mood. That's what those insurrectionists were. That's what the people from Charlottesville were. And the only way to deal with them is to not care. Why would we care what their motivation was? The guy was wearing, he was wearing a Minnesota Vikings hat. Come on, man, with a painted face. Why do I want to know his opinion? That guy's an idiot. I don't want to know anything about his political opinions, why he did it, what he had for breakfast or anything, because he's not, I don't care about him at all. I care about the guy who's on the very right wing of the Republican Party right now, looking out at those guys and wondering if they sympathize with him or not. Those are the people that I think that we should be asking what they think, not the people that are wearing a Minnesota hat, you know, busting windows. Those guys, once you do that, then you're kind of, what you think is out. out. That's what I think. But as far as your question about African Americans having to accept this, yeah, huge ask. Huge ask.
It's a huge ask. Now, Pastor David, did you have a response to something? Seemed like you had a response to something.
Well, I was just, you know, who do we ask, you know, from the guy who is a strong opponent of, you know, the guy who's rappelling up the wall at the White House. You know, he didn't throw the rope up and he climbing the wall like Spider-Man, you know, to get into the White House. I still don't understand why didn't you just walk through the front door. But, you know, you were throwing ropes all over the top as if you were climbing, you know, a mountainside. I still believe that the people who came there, not everyone, I don't believe everyone there came with intent to destroy property. I think some, I don't know who they were, but I did hear one man said he brought his son. He brought his little boy, his little son, like 6 or 7 years old. No parent brings your child to put into harm's way. You know, I think a decent person. But what I do know is people came, and when mob mentality takes over. And we have a way of controlling mobs. We control mobs, and we build these institutions all over the nation. And we have private ones, we have local ones. So if you can't control yourself in the limits of law, then we take you over to this place. And so I guess my concern is there's gotta be a way, even for the person that we thought was most idiotic in this place, I do believe they have the right to be heard. And I'm not about herding people off into the back of a paddy wagon. Well, I don't even know if they call them that anymore. Put them into a back of a police car and drive them away and lock them up for forever. But what January the 6th showed us is that there was this frenzy of attitude that was electrifying, and it was demanding that there would be nothing to stop it from getting its way. And that scares me, because when I looked at the Rwanda genocide, the, you know, days before April 4th, 1994, people were neighbors. They were just neighbors. They were friends, cousins, brothers, working at the grocery store, working in parliament. But when the people took to the radio, when the one side, and I don't want to play names, but when the one side started getting on the airway and says, we got to kill these cockroaches, we got to kill these people, we got to protect our land, all of a sudden, people, you know, started killing. They go get axes, get machetes, and start to destroy anybody who's not of your ethnicity. And they did it. And within 100 days, you know, they had killed over 1 million people. But it's that mob mentality. And so I guess what I'm saying is, when you cross lines, justice still has a role, but it must be meted out with a desire for the betterment of society, not I let you off just because what you did was horrible, but it's going to take us some time to find a better solution. But until we get there, people have to be held accountable in Rwanda. Those who committed the worst crimes were held accountable. And I just heard today, Rwanda is now touted as one of the leading countries in the world for turning around and build and rebuilding itself. But it came out of a hostility. And I'm going, so then we've got to be careful that we don't support further atrocities, But at the same time, we've got to have a better way of how do we build this nation together? And right now, it's just like it's topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
It's just we don't have a clue.
They need to be understood to prevent, you know, some major act of terrorism, not necessarily to bring them into the decision-making process. Now, Pastor Dave, the term insurrection was mentioned about 10 times in the Bible, and one passage stood out to me. As a man of faith, I was hoping you can give me some clarification. The book of Ezra, chapter 4, verse 19 says, "As and I commanded, and search hath been made, and it is found that the city of old time hath made insurrection against kings, and the rebellion and sedition have been made therein." Was there any kind of resolution in, you know, to these actions caused by the insurrectionists? And is there something that maybe aligns with kind of our history and time and their history and time? Would you have any thoughts?
Sure. The passage that you were referencing in the book of Ezra, the book of Esther, and the book of Daniel all play together. They are a trilogy of Israel's going into captivity in Babylon. Ezra deals with a ruler by the name of Xerxes, who was like a pharaoh, like a king, like the Babylonian or the Persian leadership. And so when you read what you read in Ezra, Ezra had gone to this leadership as people in captivity, says, "Hey, you know, we've spent our time, we have been worthy servants to you. Can we go back and help our people who are back in Jerusalem?" And he goes, "Okay." But those in power who was with that administration came through the side door, and they wanted him to retract what he said. And so they built lies. And so they built lies and says, "You know, Xerxes, if you allow them to go back and rebuild the temple," because Ezra was a priest, "if you go back, allow them to go back and rebuild the temple, they're going to form and become enemies of the state." And so when leadership has advisors, you know, either you trust your advisors or you don't. So this, the Xerxes says, "Okay, I hear what you're saying." Not very smart, but he goes, "Make them stop. I made a mistake when I gave them approved," because he just automatically believed what they said was true. And what that kind of said to me is, you know, often in our history, you know, you create a law, whatever, you know, let races mix in the neighborhood, you know, let black and white live together, Asians, whatever. All you need is somebody in the neighborhood is go to the HOA and say, "You know, if the blacks come in this neighborhood, it's going to be tore up in a month. Or if you let the Hispanics in, it's going to fall." And then the HOA has to go, "Oh, that's right. Let's rub that out." And so that's what happened. There was a insurrection. There was this fear of insurrection from people that they had already given authority to go back and rebuild their temple. That's all it was. And so the leadership or the powers to be said, who was Xerxes and his people, said, "No, you're right. We can't let that happen." And by the time you get to Nehemiah, it's the same thing. You'll hear in the Nehemiah, "We're going back to rebuild the wall," which is protection from our enemies. They came again and said, "Well, if you let them build the wall, then they're going to protect themselves inside, and they're going to build other things to come and attack us." And so the king had to go again. "Oh, hold up. We better not do this." And by the time you get to Esther, it's the same thing. You know, if you let these people stay living the way they are, they're going to take over. So all I'm saying is insurrections often happen with wrong information. So wrong information can fire up a group. And so you have people of power just saying, "That's information. It must be good. Let's get rid of them before they get rid of us." So it was bad information. Bad information.
Absolutely. It's kind of like a seed of corruption was planted somewhere along the line, and it took root. Tom, did you Did you have any thoughts of anything that Pastor David said there?
Yeah, no, I think that false information is a lot about a lot of what insurrections are. But I think the other thing that really has to be asked is if Hitler gets elected, then we're going to mount an insurrection, right? I mean, we can't allow that to happen, right? There is a point where I would become insurrectionist if I really thought that the person was that dangerous. But my thoughts on the motivation of the people that were at the Capitol is the following, that they see Democrats and Republicans, European Americans and African Americans working together in the government to build something good. And they hate that. And so what they're trying to do is turn us against each other. This is what I see.
Yes.
And they may be working with people on the far left, on the way other side of the spectrum, to kind of support each other. But they're trying to break our relationship with each other. That's the way I see it. Because they don't like people that have relationships. They don't believe in it. They don't trust the other people. And the people that do trust are suspect to them. So what they want to do, they're like the kid that are trying to get their parents divorced so they can party more. That's the way I see them. And I don't see any of them as having any positive feelings when they went out there. When they went out there, they knew what they were doing was wrong. That's just my opinion. And, they knew they shouldn't have been doing it, but they did it anyway. And what they were trying to do was not overthrow the government. They were trying to get African Americans to turn against European Americans. They're trying to get Republicans to turn against Democrats. That's what I think.
Yeah,
I want to just jump in. I think Tom is dead on in that discussion, in that view. I think what we are seeing is people are very much I think those who are in power are very much afraid of those who are not in their circles of mass joining together. And because of that fear, then if I'm going to remain in power, I've got to split the conscience of those who could come and remove me. And so if you saw that they're going to do X, Y, and Z. If you don't protect your kids, you know, everybody of whatever people group, that people group is going to take your kids. You know, if you allow them to be here, you're going to, nobody wants to lose their kids. And so that has to be truth from this leader. And so that, to me, is what we are seeing in America. And I will say this, Jordan, I've been thinking about this podcast even before we had come on. You know, we're moving closer to that point where instead of us looking for our senators and our presidents to make the decisions for the justice of our own ability, I think the people are going to have to step in and step up and begin to say, I'm not just voting for you because I think you, Mr. Senator, will protect me. It is, I'm voting for the person who sees the integrity of America for all people. And I'm going to do my part to make sure that I am perpetuating a healthy America. You know, I can't trust leadership right now because I think leadership actually is part of the problem. And so when Tom was saying, yeah, it keeps it, if you can keep blacks mad at the European descendant people, you can keep Europeans that afraid of the blacks. If you can keep the Asians just going in between both ways, if you can keep hostility at the lower ranks, I can drive this nation any way I want it as a leader. And I'm going, We've got to wake up to that. We've got to wake up and say, we've been fooled long enough. And may I say this great word? I was in the great state of Georgia a couple of months ago, and I went down in some parts of Georgia that I don't go to. I'm just going to tell you, I don't go into some parts of Georgia that I don't go through. And so when I was there, you know, my mind was saying, this is that radical state. This is that state that's hostile. This is that state that is so broken. I must tell you, I never met nicer white men and women than when I was in certain places. And I'm not saying that was everywhere, but all I'm saying is if we just allow ourselves to be spoon-fed with hatred and division and just accept that that is our natural diet, then that's going to be our death nail. But I believe we have the opportunity to say, as a people, we're going to begin to be the voices and the symbols of a unified country. And we're going to start in our neighborhoods or in our churches or wherever. We're going to be those voices. We have to do that. But right now, I think the voices at the top are depending on us to come apart.
Yeah, we need modern day leaders that can unite. Instead of being reactive, we need to be proactive. I totally agree with what you said there, Pastor Dave. Now, Tom, I have a question for you. Say, now back to the pardoning and all that. Say we do find a way to pardon the insurrectionists. How do we move forward from that point? And how do we actually reach the moderate Republicans?
So the first thing I'd say is I kind of agree with Dave that pardoning should not be the first thing that's done. There should be like some kind of proof of guilt. In other words, probably the best way to do would be to pardon them after the trial, because then it'll be like it never happened, you know. So I'm all for that. I'm just talking, you know, the punishment part, I would skip that. And we really didn't do that. There was a editorial in the Chicago paper that said, hang Lee, right before he surrendered. You know, there was a lot of people who, you know, wanted to do that. But really, all the people who participated in that insurrection in 1860 were pardoned. And they were pardoned for the reason of outreach to them to be able to work together in a government together. But I think that what the Republicans, you're talking about outreach to the Republicans that are still with us, that still want democracy to work. I think outreach to them is to not conflate them with the people who were at the insurrection. I mean, to me, that's the most important thing. Is you're white, and they're white. I get it, okay, but we're not saying that you think the same way that they do. That's what I think. I don't know how you get that message across, but that's what they want to hear. They want to hear that we don't think you're the type of person that's going to put on a Minnesota Vikings hat and start attacking the Capitol. We don't think that's who you are. We have more respect for you. We're happy to be in a democracy with you because we trust you. We're happy to be in a democracy with you because we respect you. That's what they want to hear.
Okay. So I totally agree with you. It starts with your neighbors, your coworkers, the people you come across daily, you know, and because we're getting close on time. Are there any final thoughts on the subject matter from either of you, Pastor David or Tom, that you'd like to share before we wrap up? You know, are there any hopes to regaining faith in each other? And can we save those that are teetering on the edge to rely on faith over fear, to support the democracy we have, to prevent another insurrection?
Well, I would just jump in real quick. Jordan, I've been giving some thought to today's podcast. You know, sometimes and this is just my own personal feelings. When I look at what Jesus wanted to do in the world is change a world system. And I've constantly said this, but it cost him his life. And we just celebrated it a week and a half ago. It cost him his life. We call it Good Friday. I think for some of the people who were his followers and wanted to believe that what he was speaking about was attainable, they thought it was all taken away at the crucifixion, and their hopes died. But we celebrate that three days later, there was a resurrection, and that something good came about even from a dark period in time. I am not one who would advocate that America must fall apart before it can change its ways. But I am an advocate of, until America really comes to grips with the massive loss that it can lose and what it's on the verge of losing, in comparison to the world around us and other powers that are, I'm not so sure if we have the ability to fix ourselves right now. I'm just not sure because I don't think we're growing more and more little people like the Charlottesville or those who had the little Viking helmet hats on. I think they've always been here, but at the same time, I think if a married couple, in Tom's analogy, which is so apropos, often a married couple don't realize how much they really love the other one until divorce takes place. And when the divorce happens, often the other ones say, you know, I did some things wrong and I wish I could have you back, or I wish we could reestablish this. Again, I'm not advocating that I want to see America implode, but obviously right now, America has not yet come to grips with, we need to do some self-reflection on what we're doing to each other and the magnitude of what it's costing our nation. And if we are not careful, as much as I want it to be successful for my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren, if we should be around that long, if the world should be around that long, I'm not afraid to think about if other great civilizations have had to find themselves on the other side of their privileges taken away before they realize what they could do. I don't know if this is a plan of God. I just know God has allowed others who thought they were invincible to fall. But he didn't end the world because they fail. They fail and others took their places. So I just say it is my desire and hope that this country that I am a citizen of would somehow come to grips with the direction and the cliff that's up the road. But I am not so sure that we got a foot on the brake from going over that cliff, and that cliff drive may be our wake up call, or the generations to come wake up call when we find out we are not who we once were. So I just want to throw that out. And I just look at that. Israel at one time was flying high, and then Israel was in captivity for 70 years. And now Israel still cannot call itself to go home. You know, it's been dispersed around the world. So I'm not a doomsday. I'm not selling doomsday, but I'm going, if we cannot fix ourselves, I don't think it's out of the hands of God to let us come to a place that we might have to be under a horrible way of life before we really realize what we pandered away foolishly.
Yeah. Well, I hope America has a prenup. Tom, did you have anything to mention?
Here's my final comment on it, right? And, you know, so people are like, how do you How do you make division go away? How do you make unity happen? What's a practical plan for that? And so the first thing I would say is that if I'm an African, or if I'm a European American man, and I'm criticizing an African American man for being divisive, that's not right. It's not helpful, right? Mm-hmm. If I want to make America less divisive, I need to criticize the people on my side. Division, you don't
right.
fight division by criticizing the people on the other side for being too divisive, because there's too much of an axe to grind. If you're going to criticize people for being too divisive, you have to criticize people that are on your own side. That would be my hint. And right. and if you're criticizing people on the other side for being too divisive, then you're being divisive too. That would be a practical hint for how to fight division.
Absolutely.
I like that.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. And of course, it always leaves us with more questions than we have answers or even time for. And I just want to thank everybody, you know, for joining us again on our podcast, Faith in Each Other. And we'll see you again on our next episode.